Gentlemen, courtesy for the performer.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all...
You wrote that?
Yesterday, as a matter of fact.
It was written by an earthman named Shakespeare a long time ago.
Which does not alter the fact that I wrote it again yesterday.
Welcome to Whom Pods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast, and a particularly fizzy Star Trek discussion podcast.
Oh, yes.
I am Terry DeFellin, the host, and joining me, as always, is Derek Mantle.
Hello.
And Graham Sidley.
Hello.
You guys don't know this, but there's a very nice bed going underneath of that of the track Arab Hooch Dance, composed
Arab Hooch
by
Dance.
Alexander Courage. And that is the piece of music that was used for Martyr's Dance.
Wow, that's a great piece of music, isn't it?
It is a great piece of music, and the listeners are enjoying it as we speak.
Percussion on it is amazing, isn't it?
It's very similar to a Venus Dance in The Cage, also composed by Alexander Courage. And it's the only piece of music commissioned for the episode that we are about to discuss, which is none other than Whom Gods Destroy. Here you go, listeners. You see, that's where we got the name from.
Yeah.
Well, it was Graham's idea, actually. But anyway, we're all taking ownership of it. One of my favourite episodes. But I thought because the reason why we got the fizz out is because it is, as we're recording this, or as you're listening to it, I can't quite remember, our first year anniversary.
Yeah.
So we've been doing this for a year, guys.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, I didn't know, I wasn't sure whether or not we would be doing this for a year, but I was confident that we would. We seem to have picked up some listeners.
That's good.
Which is very good.
Hello out there.
Hello, listeners. So before we start, we're going to do what we didn't do at the beginning, and we are just going to provide you, the listeners, with a little bit of a background as to us, who we are. We never introduced ourselves in the first episode because it's sometimes these things can be a touch self-indulgent, and you can get to know us by our opinions. Through our opinions shall ye know us, listeners. But a little bit of background then as to why we are doing this podcast. Derek, well, start with you. What makes you a Star Trek fan? Why are you a big Star Trek fan?
Well, I'm a general science fiction buff, but I suppose Star Trek was probably the first thing I was introduced to in a science fiction TV format when I was a kid. And that was during the 70s. I suppose it would have been the second time round that it was being shown. It used to be shown on Saturday evenings, and I used to watch it on a small black and white television. Mm. You know, and all that in those days. But then again, I had a black and white TV up until the 80s. A lot of people did.
I did too, although it was my own black and white TV. Yeah. I was lucky enough to have my own TV, and it was black and white. So most of my early Star Trek is...
Yeah.
Were you into the movies at all?
I was into the movies, yeah. I mean, but I was actually going to go back. I remember the cartoon as well.
Do you?
Yes, I remember watching the cartoon on, sort
we refer to it as the animated series.
It's called the animated series. Oh,
okay, series.
Yeah. It was a cartoon, but it was called the animated series.
Yeah. And
I think at the time it was just called Star Trek.
Yes.
Now it's called Star Trek. The
animated series. It's like Star Trek was called Star Trek. Now it's called Star Trek, the original series.
I know, which is... bollocks, frankly.
Yeah, it's like Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's a scandal. That is
Star Wars and New Hope.
Just bloody
that's...
George Lucas. He just can't leave it alone, can he?
Oh no.
Fuck off, George Lucas. Anything else?
I suppose when we all, when I met you, Terry and Graham. I met Terry first. I mean, one of the things that sort of we used to do a lot of, it was at the time when Star Trek Next Generation started. And we used to get those dodgy pirated VHS videos.
Did we?
To watch at your place in
Derek fantasy. Probably did. He probably knew someone, didn't he?
I didn't know that we did dodgy piracy ones. Or maybe
it was. Over there from Hayes. Do you remember?
Well, I mean, the first time I watched Encounter at Farpoint was I rented it from the video store, and then
We did that first.
Yeah, I had a copy from you. You supplied me with a copy of it.
Yeah, well, I had two VHSs.
Yeah.
And then I went down to the newsagents and hired it when it came out and went up and recorded it. And yes, probably recorded two episodes.
And at the time as well, and I think I remember showing you, I was doing the Fox Video covers for the rental videos.
Oh yeah.
You know, I was just, you know, it was.
See, now there's a geezer on Twitter who tweets nothing but those video covers.
Really?
Star Trek VHS video covers.
You'll have to look at those.
Guy called Lee.
You should get onto him.
You see, well, he might want to talk to you.
Because I remember having, I think it was Skin of Evil. It was the rental copy that we were given when I was in the art studio in Thornton Heath. Do you remember?
Yes, I do.
Working there? And I had that one VHS with Skin of Evil on, and I can't remember what was the other episode.
No, I don't remember.
And I might even still have it somewhere underneath.
It would have been right at the end of the first season, wouldn't it?
Skin of Evil, yeah. But this was before it could have been the Neutral Zone, conceivably. Yeah.
Oh, it was the Neutral Zone. Yes, you're right. Yes, which was that was a brilliant episode.
I always get Skin of Evil confused with Face of the Enemy. I always think that I always get the two confused. So you helped design those VHS tapes. Yeah, if you're from the UK and you're of a certain age, you'll remember those covers. Del Boy here helped design them.
Yeah, well, I was only repackaging because they're already sort of designed.
Del Boy is canon. Del Boy is canon. But therefore, this podcast is canon.
Yeah.
So everything that happens in it is canon.
But anyway. You know, but that's how we all got together, I suppose. Graham knew Terry for a long time.
Graham, let's hear from you about this.
Yeah, well, my first experience of Star Trek was with Derek in the early 70s. Not with Derek, but watching it in the 70s I was lucky enough to watch it on colour TV back then. It was pretty spectacular. Yeah.
So it's rich man, poor man.
Well, no, my dad
was saying, not really. No,
my dad always knew the value of a shilling, but he did like his sport. He liked any sport. And so what he really looked, so when colour TV came out, he did invest in one. Mm-hmm. And we were there. I think we were the only family on the street who had a colour TV at the time. Which
only family on the street that had a colour TV at the time. Yeah, what you sound like?
Was this the coronation by any chance?
It's a bit of an HD thing now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, my daddy, in the future, would say, yeah, my daddy loved his HD. He loved his sport, so we were the first people to buy an HD TV.
Exactly, exactly. I always thought, like, 4K and curved TVs and whatever nonsense. TV. Yeah. 3D TV.
TV in the anus, yeah. My daddy loved his TV in the anus.
He loved his colonoscopy channel.
We were the first on our street to have anal TV.
But I got back into Star Trek during the mid 80s when they had that run on BBC Two
that run started out on Peak on BBC One at 8 o'clock, but then,
did it?
but not for very long now, and it got bumped.
But it was just about when I started at the same school as Terry as well, and then I discovered that Terry was taping every episode off the telly to keep.
Yes.
And watch whenever you damn well please.
And I did as well.
Yeah, and I thought, well, bloody hell, that's true. And I got to know Terry at school, and then Terry came up with this great thing when he had, I've got the episodes that no one else has seen in this country.
Oh yeah,
which wasn't entirely true, but I was trying to impress him.
Yeah, trying to impress him.
And it was, and you say, look, these episodes are banned, and man alive, that was like waving around a V2000 disc, and a tape, not a VHS tape, a V2000 tape, wafting it around, and like my little 14-15-year-old eyes wide open. Whoa, yeah, really imagining what could have been on that tape rather than being banned.
It was just like a Clockwork Orange or Exorcist.
Exactly. You
know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That. Well, that's Drill a Killer. This is what I'm thinking. Yeah, Star Trek video nasties. I thought these were. But you know, after watching them, I wasn't disappointed.
It didn't change you.
I wasn't changed.
You weren't corrupted.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't desensitized to anything either, I don't think.
My cousin. yeah. got them for me. Like, if you remember, my cousin lives in Australia, lived in Australia then, and he shipped over the VHSs for me to then transfer over to V2000.
We got the VHSs, the next generation ones.
It's conceivable, but I'm not certain now. I don't know.
That Series 3?
No, that would have been something else. That might have been Hayes. That was probably Hayes.
It's
probably Hayes who did that. Okay. I know we used to have cable for a while. And we had cable, but then they cut it off after we didn't pay the bill.
Well, that's when
we used to watch TNG.
We were watching it
with Jeff, and you and me, and
Smurf.
And then also we then bought the VHSs because we didn't have you had Sky, and so whenever because outside for those outside the UK listeners, most of modern Trek was on Sky, which is a pay TV channel. Which may resonate with some of you who are worried about paying for Star Trek Discovery, but we had to pay for Star Trek from the start. Here and so if you didn't have Sky, you went and bought the VHSs as they came out, two episodes usually per month,
and it became like crack cocaine for a while.
And you take them back into Beano's and trade them in for next ones, or take them to cash converters.
And Beano's is in Croydon, or used to be anyway.
Exactly, so there was a whole lot of that going on, so oh cool, excellent. One of those banned episodes was Whom Pods Destroy.
I mean, that was a little sad, wasn't it?
I shall have a sip of Prosecco and I'll have another run at that.
Ding! It's 1-0 to 0.
Right, okay. One of those banned episodes is Whom Gods Destroy. A third season episode set on the planet Elba 2. This is one of my favourite episodes. I love this episode. I remember watching it with you.
Yes.
And I remember us actually, I think, watching it quite a few times because, you know, it was banned. But also, I've had memories of you and me, Graham, watching a lot of Trek on VHS or V2000 around my house. And Whom Gods Destroy featured because I think if I remember rightly, we both really, really liked Garth.
Yes.
Well, I think we've both thought that Garth was really, really good in this
episode. It's not Garth Brooks.
Not Garth Crooks, but Garth of Izar. Yeah. Actor Steve Enat. And he was a fantastic character. And I think that whole thing. And also because Yvonne Craig was in it. And not just because Yvonne Craig
was in it.
And we were like 14. And Yvonne Craig and 14. And Yvonne Craig and 14. But also because there was that. It was so vivid that there was that kind of Batman 66 feel about this episode. And there is about this episode. There's some
extensions. Garth is very much a Batman-esque villain.
Absolutely. Totally. He's really, really larger than life. So, anyway, let's get into this. So if you don't know the episode, then go and watch it now. You're back. Good. And it's set on Elba 2, which is a penal colony, for want of a better word, or a mental institution. Before the last remaining criminally insane in the United Federation of Planets, which is a bold claim. And so in order to do, what they did with them is that they put them in this domed structure on this planet that was completely uninhabitable and thought that that's what you do with your criminally insane. So it's quite an interesting premise there, guys, isn't it? I mean, about we really haven't changed that much about mental health at all, have we?
But I was thinking, actually, what if someone's claustrophobic and they put them into this little dome place?
Well, exactly.
Not very good.
Yeah. So what would you do with that? I mean, you would put them in a room, put them in a planet full of people. That doesn't seem to
work. No, that doesn't work either.
No.
Elba, obviously, is a reference to Napoleon. Where his first exile was after he was defeated. But this was when he was first defeated, not before he was actually defeated at Waterloo, when he was sent away.
It's quite a lot of these little things throughout, isn't there? Because obviously the title of the episode, Whom Gods Destroy. Obviously, is that old proverb that is,
Whom the pods would destroy, they first make man.
There you go.
But, right, whom the gods would destroy,
they first make man. I'm sorry, listeners, but we have started on the...
much like
on the fizzy podcast. On the fizzy wine, so...
Yeah.
Okay, so the next person who says pods
yeah.
instead of gods, they would have to do some sort of...
Yeah.
Well, they have to edit this podcast.
Edit the part of the podcast.
Yeah, how about that? How's about that then? Yeah, that should sort you out.
So going back to what you were saying.
Yeah, go on.
I was just saying that sort of like throughout. A lot of Star Trek episodes do have, you know, a lot of those little bits and pieces that they refer back to. I mean, the as you said, the things about the Napoleon, and obviously Napoleon is one of those things where you have people who are seen as being mad at the time if they think that Napoleon or Jesus Christ and so on. And actually, the character of Garth, he does fit that archetype perfectly.
You duck me only because I have not, as of yet, had my coronation.
No, sir, listen to me.
Stop! On your knees before me! All the others before me have failed. Alexander, Caesar, Napoleon, Hitler, Lee Kuan, Crotus. All of them are dust! But I will triumph. I will make the ultimate conquest.
You know, someone who believes that he's an emperor or the, you know, because, and there is one case when he puts that bloody crown on his head.
Yeah.
I do find that a bit cheesy, and that does hark back to the Batman sort of stuff that you were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of, I suppose it's a shorthand throughout this episode as well, you know. And then there are some very, very well-defined, interesting aspects. There are little gems in there. So I think it's a flawed episode as well. There's a you know, there's a great idea of that they could have developed someone who is a supreme strategic Starfleet commander who obviously he's fallen from grace, and in the case of the redemption that he might go through.
Yes, yes.
You know,
Garth of Izar is a really interesting character, and actually it's central to you know, there's quite a bit of world building in this episode.
Also,
if you like your world building, I mean, perhaps a little bit unintentional, but Garth was a Starship Fleet captain who went mad. He went to a planet called Antos and he got injured. He went mad, picked up shape-shifting abilities, which is not something that they ever revisited ever again until DS9. And then in DS9 came along, it was like, oh, wow, shapeshifter, oh, wow, how strange. Well, but in fact, we had shapeshifters.
It is Star Trek before. 5.
There's the Commonoid in Star Trek 6, you mean?
Oh, 6. Yeah, 6.
Yeah. Which is, well, that's a good film. No, 6.
No, 5, isn't it? What, 5?
5 is not a good film.
Yeah, but isn't the character...
Even odd-numbered films are rubbish, remember?
What's her name? Who's a shapeshifter?
Yeah, it's Iman. Iman plays a Commonoid.
Yeah.
David Bowie's missus.
Yeah.
At the time.
Oh, yeah, it's in 6. Sorry, I'm getting confused there.
So anyway, so he picks up the shapeshifting, which is the central point of the thing. Is he masquerades himself as Captain Kirk to try and escape. He captures Kirk, shapeshifts into him and tries to escape Elba 2 so that he can take control of the Enterprise and wreak his revenge. And that's where they decide to have this code, presumably because they were worried that one of the, you know, the Garth maybe might have done this. And so they said, we better have a code and a countersign of Queen to Queen's Level 3.
Does that mean anything in particular?
Queen to Queen's Level 3?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's just
tell us the countersign and I'll tell you.
It's basically what they would probably be referring to a 3D chess move.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah, sure. No, yeah. Beyond that, yeah, it is a 3D chess reference, one can only assume. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny that they introduced that little twist in there. They've never done anything like that before.
Would have thought they would have done that loads of times before.
You would have thought they'd done that quite a few. Also, it was quite weird because when Scotty and McCoy are on the bridge and Garth contacts them, they can see him through the view screen and he says, beam me aboard. And how does Scotty's mind work? Because they think, well, that guy might be an exact duplicate of the captain, so I better give the counter.
But that's the thing is... Kirk, there have been so many duplications of Kirk throughout Star Trek that he probably thinks that each time he meets him, is this actually Kirk?
Yeah, William Shatner. I mean, he gets to play a lot of roles, doesn't he? In the original series.
Yeah, we went through this before. We did. The amount of times that Kirk's played other Kirk.
But maybe that's it. Maybe Scotty always thinks that whenever he meets him in a turbo lift, is this actually, is this Kirk?
is this robot? Or is this, yeah. is this evil Kirk? Is this some mad woman who swapped minds with him?
Yeah,
is this...
we've had Android Kirk.
Yeah.
We've had other Kirk. His enemy within Kirk is the same Kirk.
Enemy within Kirk is the same guy. Right? Same guy.
Yeah. And then we've
Mirror Kirk.
Yes.
And then we've had Star Trek 6 Kirk. We had there. Anymore?
Well, he obviously played George Kirk as well. But
George Kirk, yes, so Shatner has played many roles.
Obviously he's done deranged Kirk so many times anyway. Sort of like some sort of...
And badly written Kirk.
Yeah. This is a great episode for GIFs though, isn't it? Really, if you like having your swear trick. I don't know how many it's.
Oh, I love swear.
Yeah, I don't know how many they've taken off this one.
Swear trick is great, but yeah, they need to mine this episode.
Well, especially when Garth as Kirk is beating the ground.
Yeah. no,
that's great. But do you notice a bit of his costume comes off and spinning on the floor?
Yeah, it's absolutely superb.
Yeah.
Steve Enat is the actor who plays Garth, and he was superb.
Mm.
He relished that role, I think, and he got tucked into it. And it was a fairly nuanced role. It was you know, he was raving lunatic,
mm-hmm.
absolute charming host, dignified, somber mm-hmm. captain, and also you know a comedic. Roles as well. That character had quite an arc.
It is comedic, but it's and there are laughs in this episode, but they are tempered laughs, like, because you're in a horror story here.
Yeah.
This is the locked in an insane asylum trope, isn't it?
Yes.
But I think like Steve Enat is for me when I was watching it reminded me quite a bit of a sort of role that Rick Mayall would have played.
Mm.
In that sort of almost Lord Flasher almost, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a kind of, you know, well, he's a mad ringmaster.
I suppose it's
an element of Lewis Carroll about the episode about that set.
But he plays it very camp.
He plays it superbly. Yeah, very camp indeed.
I had changed. I had risen above this decadent weakness, which still has you in its command, by the way, Captain. My crew had not. I couldn't sway them. But my new crew, the men in this room, will obey my orders without question. Gentlemen, you have eyes, but you cannot see. Galaxies surround us. Limitless vistas. And yet the Federation would have us grub away like some ants on some somewhat larger than usual anthill. But I am not an insect. I am... Master of the universe, and I must claim my domain.
Steve Enat sadly passed away at the age of 37 in 1972, so only a few years after this was made. He didn't do much else as a consequence, but he was superb. I remember him in an episode of Mission Impossible, in which he plays the enemies, because they didn't call them the Soviet Union in Mission Impossible. They didn't do that back in the 60s. But he played a sort of enemy spy, an opposite number to Mr. Phelps, who was trying, I think, to do exactly the same thing to Phelps that Phelps were trying to do to him. And they ended the episode with Enat's character believing that he'd won.
A bit like Carl.
Even though he'd lost. So it was quite one of those clever. Those, I mean, same stable, obviously, the Desilu Studios, Mission Impossible and Star Trek. But yeah, sadly died at the age of 30. And I think would have probably have gone on to have a distinguished career as a character actor.
Mm-hmm.
I have, you know, I can easily imagine him, you know, as a sort of like, you know, disgruntled journalist, sort of like opposite, you know, Dustin Hoffman in All the President's Men, or just one of these,
or at least a murderer in a Columbo episode.
I think a murderer. Oh yeah, he was made for Columbo.
Well, probably numerous times as Columbo keeps on bringing up. I mean,
We're Star Trek fans. We can't grizzle about that. I mean, we there's loads of different guest star actors in.
I don't grizzle about it. I just find it quite funny, you know.
Yeah.
I always loved that sort of like Patrick McGoohan keeps on. He's played so many killers in Columbo that, you know.
Columbo Ridge should have gone. One last question. Are you the same guy who went called 2 years ago?
Yeah. I do. Columbo was. I used to find Columbo quite a lot of fun. Its format is a bit peculiar. I actually know of people who, I won't tell you my job, but I actually heard from somebody who complained about an episode of Columbo about the fact that they had spoiled it by saying revealing the identity of the killer at the start. I had to write back and say that, you know, in the most diplomatic way possible, that that's the whole point of the show.
That's interesting. It's along with the Dirty Mac, it's like, that's him.
So Steve Emmett, yeah, and Yvonne Craig,
yeah,
we must spend a good deal of time discussing because a fantastic actress, and probably best known for Batgirl,
yes,
yeah,
former ballet dancer, but
and you can tell though she moves amazingly,
doesn't she, but she's again, there's a range of acting going on here. I mean, because, mm-hmm. I don't think we can really speak to any concerns people might have about the portrayal of the mentally ill in this episode.
Mm.
I don't think that this is an authentic episode when it comes to the portrayal of mentally ill people. So I think we can probably just enjoy it on the level of it being an episode of Star Trek. And Craig's performance, again, is full of range. That moment in when she's reciting the poetry that she claims to have read, and that very good, very comedic scene between her and Enat during that as well. And you know, when she
wrote it again this morning.
I wrote it again this morning. That's not also the fact that yeah. In the bedroom scene with Kirk, where she is quite convincing and almost manages to convince the viewer and Kirk that she's on the level and she's not. She doesn't have a knife under the pillow, and she's not about to kill him. So she's a really good actress, and I think that what do you think? Do you think that this episode is really more about those two than it is about Kirk and Spock and anybody else?
Oh, well, I would concur, though. Yeah, I mean, they're the ones who have been given the free rein to, you know.
Yeah.
To, I mean, when it comes to a Star Trek episode, it really is only Kirk in this. And the only other person who stands out is Scotty. I mean, Spock doesn't have much to do in this episode except clunk someone on the head. But
he does a double neck pinch.
There you go. Well, that's
double neck pinch.
Double neck pinch is very cool. That whole thing there is very cool when
his hands just go
yoink. I always imagine, actually, from now on, I'm going to imagine, every time I see a Spock neck pinching someone, I'm just going to, in my head, I'm going to go, yoink.
You know, but going back to the actual, the two main guest, actors in this thing, they do chew the scenery and have a great time. And also seeing Yvonne Craig as... in the green makeup, which, you know, as a young male during the 70s and the 80s and so on, seeing obviously the Orion slave girls have always been a major part of Star Trek. You know, you always sort of used to see at the ends.
They appeared every week, didn't they?
It's funny, isn't it?
They appeared every week, but actually they only appeared twice.
But that was it. I was just going to say that we didn't really know much about what type of people these were.
I think it was pretty much a given, wasn't it, really, what they were. Yeah, they were just shorthand, weren't they?
But, you didn't need much explanation.
The way they actually film her as well is great, because when she gets her own scenes on them, when she's doing the recital and she's doing the dance, they throw a green light on her to emphasize the color of her skin, and
yes,
it is, and then it gives her even more of a sort of alien sort of like nature about her. I think it's
particularly vivid, isn't it? Yeah. How does that translate from the remasters to the original, Graham? Because I know you've had a look at both.
That's fine. That really, really is fine.
Is it more colourful in the remaster? Did they ramp up the colour? Is it because for me?
No. It was always vivid. Well, I mean, it seems vivid. It is vivid anyway. If we're going to talk about the remastered,
there
isn't really a lot, is there? There is your usual ones where they do the new planets, the new sweep paths as well. They're all new in it, and I don't think there's anything else. One thing I was surprised, and I wonder if obviously it would have been it would have been a lot more expensive than the usual stuff that they would have done on the remastered versions, was the transformation scenes. And I did wonder if they would if they would actually do some kind of morphing.
Yeah,
there.
They didn't, did they? Didn't.
Rather than doing the fade out and the comedic noise,
quite funny.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's where the remasters work well. I think where they think that's authentic. We should keep that.
That's part of the deal, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like
absolutely. But they could conceivably have done that.
I wonder if they were actually tempted to do it.
I wonder if it's possible to alter the soundtrack as well. It might not be, but I'm sure they must have thought about it. Yeah. Because it is a bit rubbish.
Yeah. Well, because there is a YouTube channel where you can see the two next to each other.
Two videos,
And they show you the bits as they were and how they are in the remastered version. And there was a couple of bits that I thought as well from other episodes. And I thought, well, what other ones would they have left? Would they have purposefully left? And then the only one I could really think of was the episode that was probably straight. I don't know if it was straight before this one. Let this be your last battlefield.
Righto.
And the bits where they actually go down to the planet.
Yes, Sharon. Yes.
Yeah, and they're running around the streets, and it's like on a projection, and they're and it seems a bit weird, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And what could they do? Would they have remastered those? But they haven't. They haven't changed those.
No,
at all.
I know they hadn't kept those at all. No, I watched that one fairly recently, that episode hasn't been changed that much, I don't think.
No.
Just the exterior shots of the ships and all of that has been changed.
One thing I did notice from looking on the side-to-side shots is that they put a lot less stars in the in
the opening sequence.
In all the sequences in the remastered versions, they're a lot darker. The space scene. Obviously, the ship is a lot darker as well. But it's got a lot more contrast there.
Well, I prefer the opening sequence as well because the Enterprise seems to move faster as well.
Yeah,
and it's less defined and seems a bit less clear, and it looks more. It looks sleeker as it moves through.
The design of the Enterprise is fantastic, but I mean the way that it just sticks out like there in those 60s footage, I mean it is very much of its time, and bluntly you can definitely improve that.
And it's still
I mean they haven't messed with the design at all, they've effectively just relit it. And if anything they've made it look even more gorgeous. It's a testimony to Jeffrey's original design that it's still holds up to that kind of modern treatment. I mean, other different ships, I'm sure, would have still looked rubbish.
Now, a lot of the design in this episode is interesting. If we talked about design, a lot of the design is straight taken from the previous episode of the first season episode of Dagger of the Mind.
Yes,
which. We spoke about this before, didn't we, Derek? And you say I get these two episodes confused, and it's so easy to confuse these episodes because they use the same costumes, they use the same props, and
well, you got that big chair,
and you got the big chair.
Those episodes are set in a mental institution.
Yes, exactly.
With a penal colony.
A penal colony, I beg your pardon.
On the other one,
but with similar sort of things like a new drug being sent down and also as well is you've got these breakthroughs in mental health, and the doctor stays on the Enterprise.
Yeah, that was
he doesn't
weird.
Get involved at all.
Yeah,
obviously Bones doesn't like. I'm a surgeon.
I'm the body. I'm not the mind.
I'm a doctor, not a psychologist.
This is one of the numerous things about this episode. Let's talk about a little bit about what's not right with this episode. Yes, the premise is a bit shonky to begin with, and yes, it does borrow an awful lot from Dagger of the Mind, as you said, the props.
Yeah.
Governor Corey's uniform, for example, is the same as.
And that's another guest star we haven't mentioned.
No, we haven't. Mentioned.
This guy is like Hollywood bit part gold, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Oh,
yeah.
What was he in?
He was number one son from the Charlie Chan film in the 40s. He was also the Kato from the Green Hornet of the 50s.
Really?
Oh, and cool. And he was Master Po in Kung Fu. Okay.
I really liked him. I thought that he had a real humanity. He actually seemed to be more real than a lot of the other characters.
Yeah.
Everyone else seemed to be amplified.
Yeah.
He seemed to be
very grounded.
Very
yeah.
grounded and yeah. human and, obviously sort of empathic to what was happening, even though he's been tortured.
Yeah.
He was actually really... he's actually probably a very nice person to meet, actually.
Key Luke.
Key Luke.
Or Luke Shek Ki, to use his Cantonese name.
Okay.
And yes, I mean, as you say, Graham, a filmography as long as your arm. considerably longer, in fact. All the way up to Gremlins.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, he was in Gremlins.
Oh my God, he's the grandfather in Gremlins.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's the grandfather. Excuse me. Good Lord. He's the grandfather from Gremlins. I didn't put that together at all.
Wow.
I was so focused on Craig and Enat that I must confess I didn't focus myself on Corey. But that's probably because he tends, as you say, to blend into the background somewhat. But he has some really interesting scenes, because, I mean, where he's been clearly been tortured and the suffering that he has, and, you know, it works really, really well. But he does disappear for sections of the show as well, is probably why he tends to blend away. The show, I think, loses itself a little bit in the third act. I think the script is not very strong and probably could have done with maybe being 10 minutes
shorter. Well, I have some problems, actually.
Of course you do.
You know, but I got some ointment for that.
yeah, but we want to know about we want to know about the episode, or your problems.
But my issue is with the whole premise. It starts off very well, but the idea of, like, someone who is a captain who has had a major effect on, you know, Kirk, because he's quoted as being one of Kirk's sort of idols, you know, sort of strategic genius, and you know, and obviously things have gone bad for him. He's gone mad. He's gone through, you know, sort of the usual sort of shell shock, or maybe something more.
He's done what usually happens to Kirk's idols.
Yeah,
he's either gone mad, or they form a Nazi state, or
That's true. Yes, yeah. But the thing is that the idea of, in the Federation, that you have someone of you know, who really goes off the rails, and then, as we're in the third act, this is the bit that I don't like. You said it turns into a horror movie, and where Yvonne Craig's character, she's basically murdered by him.
Oh yeah, that's chilling. I mean, I think it may be what got the episode banned,
because
it was the torture scenes that were, and this is really, really grim.
It's dark.
I mean, not only is she taken out to die, to choke to death in a poisonous atmosphere, she's then just basically blown up.
Yes, he says, and I will help her now, and blows her up.
And Kirk just watches it.
Yeah.
And it really does strike. He's in a similar... Kirk, the main scenario of this is Garth trying to get Kirk to hand him his ship, to give him the codes to get back on the ship.
Mm.
And he doesn't. And... So it's played out very similarly to the bit in Star Trek III, where Krug is after Genesis, and so you've got this battle between them where Kirk just isn't letting him have it, and in that episode in this episode it's Marta that dies. In the film, it's his son that ends up being killed,
yes,
because he won't.
He
won't negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah.
So he's, but similarly, you know, similarly horrific things happen. Yeah. Because it was going to be Savick, wasn't it? It was going to get killed there.
But Kirk doesn't. I mean, Kirk doesn't seem to be agonising at all over the fact that he just simply is not willing to give the codes over to Garth.
This is someone who tried to kill him, though, just in the previous read.
Yeah, that's true. So, but I mean, you're faced with the reality of Marta, who is insane. She's ill. Mm-hmm. She's essentially an innocent. I mean, she's in care. She's effectively an innocent.
But there has been a lot of duplicity of misdirection throughout the whole of this episode. So it's easy to sort of think, well, this could be just another trick.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? Like, write it out. If you really want to kill off your people one by one,
that's one way. That's another way of looking at it. Actually, in fairness, that's true.
But it's
still,
I mean, obviously,
it's pretty cold, isn't it?
Well, it is. But, you know, he's Kirk the Soldier in this one, isn't
yes.
he? So that's the way he gets through it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could drive a bus through everything, all the actions that you've done. But the only thing you can get away with is that, well, yes, that he's insane. So there you go. That's why he doesn't actually get his hands on the ship, because if he was of a mind, he could easily do it.
You do have to wonder what on earth would have happened if he had got control of the ship.
Yeah.
I think he'd have been found out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then that would have been the end of it. But,
Well, especially with that bloody crown on his head.
Especially with that crown on his head, yeah.
And the cape.
And the cape, which was magnificent, by the way. I think the uniform that he was wearing was the same as that guy from the Galileo 7.
Yes.
Feeling.
Yeah.
I think it was, what's the guy? It's Ferris?
Ferris, yeah.
Yeah,
Commissioner Ferris. Yeah, that, yes. Yeah, with that that awful uniform, really. Yeah. It was a bit flamboyant, you know.
A couple of things I just want to raise and then we should wrap up. There's a very nice bit while Garth is trying to recruit Kirk and Spock.
Mm.
Initially, he tries to recruit them. And there's a nice speech by Kirk about, and invoking the words, "They had a dream," when referring to the sort of like early founders of the Federation and Starfleet, you know, after the Axanar War, I think, is the backstory that we're talking about.
I agree, there was a time when war was necessary, and you were our greatest warrior. I studied your victory at Axanar when I was a cadet. In fact, it still required reading at the Academy.
As well it should be.
Very well. But my first visit to Axanar was as a new-fledged cadet on a peace mission.
Peace mission? Politicians and weaklings!
They were humanitarians and statesmen. And they had a dream. A dream that became a reality and spread throughout the stars. A dream that made Mr. Spock and me brothers.
And those four words, "they had a dream," quite prescient, I suppose, for the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
But a nice echoing of the sentiment, again, more world building, more understanding of what the Federation is and about the ethics of the show and the politics of the show, even if it is a fairly crude an episode. It's interesting that they had those little vignettes in there. Co-written by Jerry Soule, proper science fiction writer Jerry Soule.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those elements of quality do come through in their character byplay and in that, but then in terms of the plot, it's a bit...
Well, it could, yeah, I mean, it could be better. I mean, there's some really brilliant ideas, and as you point, there are some really good reference points to what was happening at the time. I mean, the whole thing anyway about mental health, there is a golden story that is in here, and, you know, how it's been delivered. I mean, it's been delivered, it's the third year of the series, so... And that has ramped up the sort of Batman-esque type sort of part of it as well. You know, it's a popular show.
Yeah, and of course they've got a Batman actress.
Yeah, the actress, well. And so it seems that it's been pulled lots of different ways, this. Like, the original story could have probably been a bit more, always with Star Trek, there are some great ideas and science fiction ideas throughout this whole thing, you know, that can be... maybe developed a little bit more, but they've only got like 45 minutes to do this in.
Exactly.
So, and they've been pulled from hither, there, you know.
So they wrap the whole thing up, don't they, with this rather foolish, I think, the climax is, you know, who's the right person? Is it me, or is it, I'm Kirk, you know, kill him, you know. Whereas, in fact, the phaser was set on stun anyway, so it didn't really make any difference. I mean, he could have just shot both of them, and that would have been the end of it. So that was a bit daft. Leonard Nimoy did not like this episode.
No.
He wrote to the producers stating that the character of Spock's behaviour was inconsistent with the character, and he's almost certainly right.
Yeah.
But just probably to go back to the point, I think the joy in this episode isn't with Kirk and Spock, really. It's with Garth and Marta. Those are the two main characters, I think, in this episode, and for me, what make it such a lovable and enjoyable episode.
Mm. Yes, it's a great Trek episode.
Yes,
but it's not a great
episode. It is the kind of episode that only a Star Trek fan can love.
Yes, I would agree.
You wouldn't show it to a new Trek.
No.
Someone who'd never seen Trek before.
Exactly. I mean, you see it because and you enjoy the fact that there's an Andorran and a Tellarite there.
Yeah,
but
that's cool.
They're only there to stand around and not to move their faces, so their makeup doesn't fall off.
Especially because the Android is still using the same antennas from the guy from Journey to Babel. Okay, at least a year old.
Okay, I want to ask something. This is a really quick thing. With Andorans, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, they're great, you know, characters and as Star Trek, and they worked on them a bit better and obviously in the Enterprise later on, you know.
Yeah.
But in the animated series, I thought the Andorans actually had the the talent to actually also change, you know, shape and stuff like that.
There was I don't remember that.
There was an episode of the animated series.
I haven't seen the animated series.
But maybe the
you mean the cartoon?
Yeah, the cartoon. Okay.
We'll have to check that.
Yeah, we'll have to go back
to
that.
Is that on that shelf up there?
Okay. Well, we'll have a nose.
Maybe one day we'll look it up. I don't remember that. I only remember Andor turning up in one episode, and that was yesteryear, but it's been a while since I've watched those cartoons, so I'm not entirely certain.
It's a series.
Sorry. Do we have anything more that we want to say about whom?
Well,
you got me.
You were going to say something, Derek. Go on.
I was going to say, well, we did mention very short bit about The Dagger of the Mind, because Graham got me to watch that.
Yes.
And I loved that episode, actually. For different reasons. I think that the actors who are in this, I know we're talking about Whom Gods Destroy, but I wanted to bring up Dagger of the Mind. It is a brilliant episode. Go and watch that as well. I mean, you should.
All right. Well, I tell you what. We've got. Well, we're doing one more after this one.
Yeah.
Next month, we'll do Dagger of the Mind.
Why not? Let's do Dagger of the Mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Okay. We're going to wrap things up here from there. By the time you hear this, listeners, Star Trek Discovery will be out. Are you guys looking forward to Star Trek Discovery? Are you planning on watching Star Trek Discovery?
Of course.
Yeah.
If I find a way, yeah.
If you find a way, you haven't got Netflix, have you?
No.
Okay. So we're not going to really go into Discovery on this podcast. This is a TOS podcast. Mm-hmm. When we started, I had in mind that we would begin with TOS and then we would maybe start talking about TNG or DS9 or Voyager and maybe what have you. But I'm quite comfortable with the original series.
I think it's very fertile.
And I think there's a lot there, and I think that we can carry on doing that until further notice, basically. We have the right to talk about anything we want on Star Trek.
It's
our podcast. But that's where we're going to go. But we won't be talking much about Discovery, but we're certain that there'll be other podcasts out there who'll be talking about it a lot. But needless to say, I am looking forward to it greatly, and I hope it's a success. So we'll be recording the next one but after this, so we still won't have listened to have watched it, so we won't know. But I will say now that I hope that you enjoy it when it comes out, and I hope you're not too nervous about it as well. Thank you for listening to Whom Pods Destroy. If you're listening to this podcast via a web player, then we hope you'll consider subscribing via Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or any other podcatcher you choose. Go to whompodsdestroy.com for all the feeds you need. If you already subscribe, then please do leave a 5-star rating for this podcast. Healthy ratings alert the oracles that run the podcast aggregators to our presence and help to promote the show. Thanks again for listening, and from myself, Terry DeFellin, from Graham Sibley, and from Derek Mantle, it's goodbye.
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 Queen to Queen's level 3.
Queen to King's level 1.